There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
That's right. Welcome in to Hour 2 of Old School here on The Ticket. Austin Orman and Jay Foreman with you. Don't get a chance to talk much NBA. We're going to do that right now. Starter Hammer Jewelers text line. And I'm not going to convince you of everything. 402-464-5685. I promise you NBA players aren't as soft as you think they are. Even if I don't change your mind, allow me to lay out some data and some thoughts before you as to why you could at least consider changing your mind or giving the players and the teams at least a little bit of some benefit of the doubt. Thanks, as always, to the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese Special Ingredients and Butcher Shop with 3 Lincoln locations and 1 up in Omaha for their sponsorship of the show. Again, 3 Lincoln locations, 1 in Omaha. You can also learn more online, themercadobutcher.com. All right, let's start with this. Stars in the NBA missing time. The NBA's definition of a star is a player who has been an all-star or all-NBA player in the last 3 seasons. And then so far this year, going into yesterday's games, those players, 45 of them, had already combined for 200 missed games. Some names include Jalen Williams and Tyler Hero, who haven't played yet. Zion Williamson, Anthony Davis, and Trae Young have barely played so far this year. Of course, a chunk of that 200 games, Jay, would come from, you look at Tatum, Halliburton, Irving, and Lillard being injured. But even if you take those 4 guys and the games they've missed out of that 200, stars have only played in 75% of the available games, down from 87% of available games at this point 2 years ago. Okay, 17 teams have multiple guys that fit that criteria of either all-star or all-NBA in the last 3 years. Those 17 teams have only had their full, you know, complement of star players play together in 32% of potential games, and only 9 of those 17 teams have even had all their stars available simultaneously even once this season. That's a lot for a league, Jay, in the NBA that starts when it does, you know, late October, early November, play a bunch of games. You're competing with college football, you're competing with kind of early mid-season in the NFL. To have this many players, again, 45 guys who have combined for 200 missed games already this year, that's not exactly getting off on the right foot.
No, not at all. And it's interesting because, you know, take the injured guys out because that's just, you know, you can't put you can't put them in the equation. You wonder, what is it about the offseason that their guys are dropping so early? Right? Do you need a longer preseason to get them kind of ramped up? You're going to have to change something to make sure that these quote unquote star players are playing. Number one, you want the fans to get their money worth, and obviously with the TV mm-hmm. rights, you want to have the best product out there, right? You want to be able to stream it and everything and not to be like, oh, well, it's only a Tuesday. We know, you know, Steph Curry and LeBron's not going to play or whatever, you know, just be, you know, what load management. And I don't think changing the amount of games will help. These guys don't want to work. So they want to get paid the max and work less. So you're going to have to find a way to structure the contracts based on how many games are available within reason, right? Mm-hmm. And we know that there's times that, you know, guys have just decided that, you know, this is their pitch count and they're taking a day off. And there is, you know, do you have to have more days in between? Maybe you don't do back-to-backs. Maybe you just do back-to-backs, and then you kind of have your mini bye week like you do in the NFL, like on a Thursday night game. Mm-hmm. You got to find some incentives for guys to play. And there's too many incentives for them not to play. It's no skin off their back. They're still getting paid the same. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you're losing a game check. You know, you're not really losing credibility, because their credibility comes from their game checks. They're not playing for the pride of the game and getting the respect. Now, the respect is the paycheck, and there is a balance in between that. But then also, maybe if you change the CBA to where, you know, they cut out the middleman, the way that the salary cap is with the apron and all that, maybe that will get some of the guys that are kind of overlooked and playing on almost at the league minimum, they'll be able to rise up and push those guys. I don't know what – I mean, right now they got to look at everything. And sure, you might have to be open to it. But what if it doesn't work? How are you going to sell – so if you go from 82 to 68, right? How are you going to sell back those 14 games? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, preseason's not going to do that for you.
Well, okay, say you go, okay, we're going to try a two-year experiment for 68 games. What, networks are going to just be out 14 games?
Yeah, I guess.
So that means, are you taking less money? Like, is
you can't afford to do that right now. You just signed a new deal.
Right. So we locked in. So stop talking about it. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because that ain't changing. What's got to change is the guys getting out there on the floor.
What has changed already is the pace of games. 101 possessions per 48 minutes this year. Last year at this time, it was 99 possessions for 48 minutes. Compared to 1997, that's 10 more possessions per game.
And
it's the fastest pace on average league-wide since the 1980s. Okay, that's just something to keep in mind.
Regular season. But what happens in the playoffs?
We all know it slows down a little bit, but you got to get through the regular season to get to the postseason. So, and those 10 extra possessions per game, per 48 minutes, add up. When did Tyrese Halliburton pop his Achilles? Started game 7. You know, that's a problem. Jason Tatum, when did he pop his? Started the playoffs. Kyrie Irving, when did he injure his knee? Right before the playoffs would have been.
So do you expand the rosters then?
That's an option.
Well, then expand the rosters. Then you have no excuse. But you still suiting up and you playing. Like, the pace of play is one thing, but that's not affecting everybody out there playing. You're choosing to play this way.
Okay. So I mean, I'm glad we got there. Right? Because what the NBA is going to be hard-pressed to do is legislate the three-point shot and the style of play out of the game. It's been proven to be effective. Teams get there different ways. The league is more stylistically diverse, and I think its detractors want to give it credit for, but everyone knows what a good shot and what a bad shot is, right? Teams are playing faster. They are taking more threes, more shots at the rim, because those are the quote-unquote efficient shots. You're also not going to legislate athleticism out of the game, right? Because think back to, let's go to 97, that year when pace was 10 possessions slower. It was a different kind of physical challenge. That was brawn. That was muscle. Yeah. It was physical contact. It was bumps and bruises. One of the more common injuries now, Jay, we spent a little bit of time talking about it when it happened to Tatum and Halliburton in the playoffs, and it's popping up again now with even a guy like Victor Wembanyama. You have a guy who's 7'4", doing guard movements. Think about the injuries that we've talked about a lot. Sure, knee injuries have happened here and there, but kind of the injury du jour in the NBA is the Achilles.
Yeah,
you know, what ends up being the buffer or the biggest help to the Achilles is the calf. You're running 10 more possessions. You're jumping even more. You're changing directions because everyone's a guard now. Yeah, sure. You always put miles on your calves and on your Achilles, no matter what you're doing. But when you had double big lineups where both guys sat in the paint and really had to run, you know, paint to paint, weren't asked to guard out on the perimeter, weren't asked to dribble, weren't asked to handle and create. Again, this isn't everyone, but it's more and more players across the league. It was a different kind of wear and tear. Something will change in the NBA. I don't know if it's going to happen organically, though, because the more and more guys you have playing faster with guard skills, with guard movements, putting unnatural strain on their calves and on their Achilles and wearing down by the end of the year. Victor Wembanyama was headlining star, leading the number two defense in the league, essentially single-handedly, with what he can do as an alien. You know, 30 years ago, that guy's in the paint. Yeah. Not where he, quote unquote, should be.
Yeah, like but the 11th
evolution of the game moves him out. You can't tell him not to do that. It's modern basketball. You know, you can't say, okay, well, if you're 6'10 and above, You're not allowed out beyond the 3-point line on offense. That's not going to happen. Yeah. So either players have to get smarter because, hey, maybe this isn't best for me long term. Same thing with pitchers in baseball, but it's what's incentivized. This is what gets me paid right now. This is my best chance to make it to the league, is to have this skill or these skills in my bag. You have to be really careful about how you tweak the incentive system, because you don't want to say, well, just because we don't like this style of play, we're getting rid of it. It's been what's proven to be effective. Teams are always, always, always going to chase that unless you give them a reason not to. Wemby just has a calf strain right now, but the reason teams are so cautious with that is because it does protect the Achilles so much. And I think that there are enough medical doctors who have done studies out there that say, yeah, the way these guys are moving, the rate at which they're moving, that does provide maybe some extra strain that these guys aren't used to seeing on that specific part of their body that's leading to more and more of these games, which is where you can only do so much in the realm of rehab, in the realm of nutrition, and in the realm of prevention before the miles ultimately add up and one wrong step costs a guy a year.
Yeah, but these guys ain't got a lot of miles on them. Like, I mean, do you think these dudes didn't play hard like this amount of strain? They played basketball.
Well, I'm saying it was different amount of strain.
Yeah, but they played different basketball, type. Austin, year-round when the NBA, like when Jordan, they played hard year-round, even in the offseason. These dudes chill. Get your ass in shape, man. You're getting paid 30-something, 40 million. Sometimes mm-hmm. guys $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And you come into training camp in so shape, and then you just kind of use the first quarter of the season getting shape. That's not a mileage or a pace place. That's a you problem. It's a byproduct of paying these dudes way too much money and not working. Now, sure, Kevin Durant, he had been playing a lot, right? And sure, he was older. Same with Kyrie and the way they play. There is probably evidence for it, but I think, you know, guarding against injuries based on the rules that they let set forth the paces, essentially, you're not even band-aided the problem. You're just essentially taking one wound and putting another part of your body because you're not fixing what needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. You either expand the rosters, you can't shorten the schedule because you already got paid for it. Mm-hmm. So then now let's figure out how we can make this schedule better so there's ample amount of rest, travel, so forth and so on, and see where it goes from there. If you expand the roster, and then, you know, you have to go deeper in your bench, you mm-hmm. know, but you're still playing the guys.
Yeah.
And
that's where I land ultimately, is that if you give guys more options, give coaches more options, they're going to want their best guys out there on the court more often, obviously. But, you know, can you get to a point where these guys are out there often enough, they're playing, they can meet the 65 game threshold then to be eligible for the awards?
They know what big games are. But also keep them healthy. Those guys know what big games are. A lot of guys don't have pride enough to play in big games. When they're playing against somebody good, they're like, all right, man, it's just my day off. How you doing? Hey, man.
Well, you're talking about Embiid ducking Jokic all the time.
Multiple guys. The pride of stepping out there, the Cade Cunningham, the guy that wants to bring it to you and prove himself versus the guy that feels like he's proved himself and wants to get his get back against the Cunningham, or Cunningham getting it against him or whatever, isn't there. You get what I'm saying? So you can expand the rosters. I think you also need to address the CBA. You got to get more mid-level contracts back in there, right? Because rising tide, you know, lifts all ships, and so that'll put more pressure on guys to, you know, be out there. But then also it'll save the coach can look down the bench, and what's his name that was with the Clippers last night? The left Powell, right?
Norm Powell.
Norm Powell that got mm-hmm. traded. Right? Remember, he got traded. So he got traded instead of them giving him a new contract. So now I can go sign a Norm Powell, right? Mm-hmm. So a really good contract, a mid-level contract, or like, mm-hmm. you know, Beasley before he got hurt, knowing, okay, I got to rest Jimmy Butler or whoever,
mm-hmm.
right? We're still going to win. So my job's going to be safe because I know I have a reliable veteran down there, not only for the next couple years. So I can start mapping out my team with my star players and my supporting cast, which is those type of guys, right, for the next 2 or 3 years, instead of shipping them to Miami because we don't want to pay them, because either we pay the four guys that we, you know, have as the top level guys, mm-hmm. and then the guys that are at or below the veteran minimum, and a good player like that in our system that we kind of can take credit for that we developed because of the opportunity, because of some injuries and load management. Now he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Playing in Miami in a situation that's so at best for him.
Yeah.
So both teams are losing. Miami's not getting the best version of him.
Clippers aren't as good as they were
either. And then overall, it's not helping anybody either. And then also, even bigger than overall, is the networks aren't getting the best product out there.
Dad chimes in. Good show, guys. Part of his long-term wear and tear from playing AAU or other basketball for years and years from ages younger than ever. The Achilles tendon only has so many miles in it. We're seeing this, I think, in basketball now with the Achilles. Baseball's had to reckon with this, and they're still fighting their way through it with the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow. Those are relatively small, tendons and ligaments that a lot is required of. And the more you require of it, in terms of the force and the load and the number of games and times you're going to jump or you're going to throw, there's only, so many miles in all of them. I mean, having Tommy John surgery in high school is incredible for pitchers now in baseball, right? You never want Achilles injuries. They sap a lot of athleticism. Now the rehab is better than it ever has been in terms of the procedures to get you back. I mean, Jason Tatum, just a couple months after his surgery, was dunking off 2 feet. So certainly the medical technology is improving. But I think the point stands that the more you specialize, the more that you're doing can be dangerous unless you have a plan for what you're doing and working out other muscles alongside it to make sure that you're not just stressing that one repeatedly and letting it be the ticking time bomb that it's turned into.
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously seen the amount of games. I think they have a better handle on it now where, like, when you're playing in these live events, it's only, 4 games a weekend, but it's a money grab.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a lot of these tournaments. And, I think there is some credit to there. A few years ago, I think Kevin Garnett talked about it, where some of those, he was talking about the Compton team that had that Mikey Williams?
Mikey Williams,
yeah. Where he would come and they play like 6 games or something like that. Now it's really 4 games. Now the timing in between the games is something, but you get a lot of wear and tear on it. But also I think
did you know Mikey Williams is still in college?
Yeah, he's at Sacramento State, right?
Indeed,
yeah.
He is.
I think also having some sort of off-season program, realistic program, and taking care of your body is a bigger part of that. I know they all work hard. I know Kyrie does, and maybe he, got worn out or whatever. There is credit to that. But I also know this modern-day athlete, and especially NBA players, NFL players as well, these brothers break, okay? You get what I'm saying? And if you're a professional, college and pros, there is no time off. There's only short segments where you get to redirect your energy, but you never lose focus on what your job is. Because you've seen the documentaries where, sure, the pace of play wasn't the same in the NBA, but physically it was different. But they played year round.
Mm-hmm.
So they're playing just as much. And I understand the more possessions. So there's a way to it. You got to get your body in shape for it. But also think I can almost guarantee their NBA training camps aren't as hard.
It's just weird with all the, improvements in nutrition and technology and rehab, though, that we're seeing more of these injuries, even if guys are working less. Well, unless you're saying the muscle gets out of shape.
Yeah, but if you don't use it, you don't train it, you're out of shape. These guys, just because they got big arms don't mean they in shape. These football players?
Yeah.
You're out of shape.
I get it, yeah.
Now, I do think like baseball, when you got kids overthrowing, I think a lot of that stuff from a very young age, just like some of the injuries that you get in football, the fundamentals are just pushed to the side. What's sexy now?
Velocity.
Right. What's sexy now? Trying to go and knock somebody out or do something that you don't need to, right? Because it gets you on Instagram.
Yeah.
Basketball, what do you want to do? You want to do like 85 dribbles, in and out dribbles.
And then dunk on someone.
And then jump off the wrong foot so you can go viral. But in the game, that didn't work. So I think there's the problem is there's like 4 major things, and you do have to actively attack the ones that you can control. You can control that mid-level player that's no longer in the league or is jettisoned down to the
the G League or the Europe or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Or Europe going overseas or a league minimum. Or and some guys are talking about, you know, what's his name? Larry Nance
Jr.
Was talking about, I think he took a contract below whatever his veteran slotted is to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Right. So you can control that. Mm-hmm. Right. You can control the schedule. You got 82 games. You got a time frame when you start. If you got to start later, or you know, you got to start earlier, end or whatever it needs to be. Mm-hmm. You can work it out. Sure, you might have less, let's say Lakers Celtics back in the day or whatever, the two like clashing of the Titans, yeah, where you might, instead of having it four times a year, you might only have it two, but it's for the betterment of the league that you have it.
That's where the CBA point and that scheduling point would be really interesting to see the league's internal data, because I think especially in basketball, since the decision, maybe before that a little bit, but really since the decision, you know, quote unquote, player empowerment era that LeBron really kicked off, the NBA has become more about the individual than about the team.
1,000%.
Which is where you see those salaries explode, right? The salary cap jump in what, 2015, 16, 17, somewhere in there. Also, you know, in conjunction with that, helped lead to a lot of where we are, where a lot of NBA fans, my guess is, especially ones, you know, maybe like right here in Lincoln, they don't have a team, but they have a player.
Yeah.
So they'll follow them around and around. I would love to see the league's internal data and get their opinions on, do they think that their popularity is because of the players or because of the league itself? It would be a huge leap of faith, I would guess, for most people sitting up there in the offices in New York to say, you know what, we have to use our stars and market them, face of the NBA discussion, whatever, we've had that. But what we think is better for the league long term is making sure we have 30 healthy franchises, more so than 30 healthy individual stars. Well, you know, you get 24 all-stars, you get 15 all-NBA guys a year, and sure, those guys will drive ratings. But I think more than anything, those guys need to be the reason that fans in those cities come to watch them play. But for the casual NBA fans, they just want to flip on a game after work, they're watching a bar, and they just want to enjoy the league, maybe aren't a diehard. That's where it's more important to have, I think, 30 healthy teams than 15 healthy stars.
Yeah, 30 healthy teams. You make it to where each team has a true star. If you can fudge with the schedule, everybody's on national games as well. So that's profiling or bringing up everyone else's profile.
Yeah. And not just NBA TV paywall. Yeah,
right.
That,
right. So I'm talking about the real deal. Yeah. Right. So now really it is about the players. That's why it's so important in this case. We've talked about it 10 million times. I remember when I was excited with Chet against, you know, Wimby, because that's going to be potentially the NBA moving forward. Now they have to be able to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Right. Another thing, we don't have the next up and coming American born superstar, legit iconic player. We have all the Europeans. We don't have that. So now that discussion there lets you know it's about the players. Now, maybe LeBron's decision changed that and it was great, but it was probably forced because he could be the moving force to get the guys paid probably their market value. So again, the things that you could control, you didn't control. So now you're having another go round at it and you can't sit on your hands because you have to go back and maybe look at how we got here, which is the very beginning, right, to right now.
And you get back to where you are. Some of the stuff you're going to have to give back.
Right. And if you want to have a little bit of the rivalries of back, you know, when I was watching, you know, or I still watch, but, you know, watching when it was really good because it was healthy, because you got to think Charles Barkley. And then, you know, you got to see Charles Barkley 7 games against Jordan in the first round. Seven.
Yeah.
Right. And you saw it on the West Coast. You saw Kevin Johnson and Tom Chambers and them against the Lakers in that. You want to get back to that, you're going to have to make adjustments. It's not just going to fall out of the air and get Steph Curry and LeBron James. They are about to exit stage right or stage left or whatever it's called. And you don't have a next opening act.
No.
You don't.
Not right now.
Right. And you've had time. Now you've had some circumstances. Ja, Zion, Anthony Edwards, and now I'm cool, right? Maybe that'll change as he matures.
Even COVID, you know, maybe even 5 years from there. Like, this is what it looks like without these guys.
Right. But you had a couple guys that you thought could take over the league, and they had opportunities. Maybe it's your boy at BYU. Doubt it.
Maybe it's that number 32 in Dallas.
He ain't athletic enough, but he cold blooded though.
My boy Coop ain't athletic enough.
No,
you kidding
and,
me?
And neither is your boy Boozer. I'm
excited. No. We'll have to have a conversation at some point.
Yo, yeah. Highly disappointed.
Stay my puff, man, Marshmallow Man.
No, nah, man, my man looked like he run with Timberlands on the ones I had.
Yeah, we'll have the Ken Boozer conversation at some point. Mud Dog says, I used to be much more into the NBA, big-time NBA guy growing up. I've been much more into college ball the last 5 or 6 years. Not even sure why it's all changed for me, but I know I'm not alone. Well, Mud Dog, Corner 3, Friday 6 to 7 right here, 93.7. Let's take it. Highly recommend you check it out. We'll go to break. Call Bevan Blando of the Omaha World Herald right after this.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
That's right. Welcome back in to Old School here on The Ticket. Austin Norman, Jay Foreman with you. 4:30 on a Wednesday means we're headed to our Aloe Fiber VIP line, where we're joined by Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald. Evan, last time we talked, you were just getting back from your trip out to sunny Los Angeles. Are you preparing for a trip out to Cloudy State College this weekend?
Yeah, preparing. It's a little bit more of an adventure to get there. I've only been one time, 2017, and it's unless you're really invested in flying right into State College, you know, you go to either Pittsburgh or Philadelphia. We're going to Pittsburgh and making the 3-hour drive. So yeah, I'll be there. It's going to be a little bit different experience than the Rose Bowl.
That 2017 game, that was the 56-45 shootout, right?
Yep. Nebraska was a big underdog. Saquon Barkley was rolling that year, and then Nebraska scored a bunch in garbage time. I remembered it was wet and the weather was gross, and they scored a couple late touchdowns just to kind of draw the ire of the locals. It was never really in doubt. But yeah, ultimately, you know, Nebraska kind of hung in there. I think they covered that day, for what it's worth.
Good teams win, great teams cover. So shout out the 2017 Nebraska team for being great, although the betting was much more behind the scenes at that point than it would be now. Interesting series in the Big Ten here, Evan, between these two. They play the first 3 years that Nebraska is in the league. Then they have that gap until 2017. They play in the COVID year that Nebraska wins here at home, and they haven't played since. This is one that I get with the divisions breaking out the way they did, why it didn't become more regular. But man, if you would have told me, you know, Nebraska is in the Big Ten, that's a team in Penn State they have a lot of history with, I would have thought this would have become maybe more of a regular series than once every 4 or 5 years.
I think that was probably the original vision when Nebraska joined. I mean, Penn State was a relatively late Big Ten ad too in the 90s. And so I think there was that time in the early 2010s when Jim Delaney, the Big Ten commissioner, and TV folks thought that could be two major brands going at it right below Ohio State and Michigan, and obviously didn't turn out that way. And Penn State had its own struggles. And I think everyone's going to remember, you know, the game that Nebraska played out there the week after they fired Joe Paterno and just all the emotions that were into that because of the Jerry Sandusky scandal. But it's two brands that are unquestionably blue bloods in the sport, and everyone talks about kind of the 94 teams, you know, when Penn State went undefeated, Nebraska won the national title, so they're kind of tied together that way. But I was kind of surprised to learn as I've gone back that even Tom Osborne and Joe Paterno never met on the sidelines, like opposite each other. So kind of fascinating that they were sort of running parallel to each other for all these years, and that's kind of extended into where it is. And you know, you mentioned the 2020 COVID game, like it almost was like that game didn't happen, really. I mean, no fans in the stands, and it was just a weird, both programs were in weird spots at that time. So not that Penn State's super established at this point with an interim coach, but hopefully this is a game that we'll get to see a little bit more often, and that'll be competitive, and these will be two teams that'll be fighting for CFP bids moving forward, because certainly they both have the resources and the history to suggest that could be possible.
Yeah, these have been two programs in the Big Ten that haven't really ever met when they're on equal footing. I mean, maybe you can say the early 2010s when Nebraska first joined the conference, they were closer, but know, Penn State was reeling, like you said, from the Sandusky scandal, 2017. Nebraska was in turmoil, looking for a head coach at that point. 2020 was COVID. That was weird. Nebraska beats Penn State, you know, part of the end of their losing skid before they turn it on late and set the stage for where they got to. And now this year, you know, it's Nebraska at 7-3 and Penn State down at 4-6, but still a plenty talented Penn State team. Evan, do you think they've been, you know, playing legitimately better football since James Franklin left? Are they playing to their talent level, or is this just kind of a Penn State team that's playing out the string right now?
Well, I think they're motivated to play for their interim coach, Terry Smith. And I mean, they carried him off the field last week when they got that win against Michigan State. So it's clear that they're still playing for something, and they're still looking for a bowl eligibility if they win out. I mean, they got to beat Nebraska to get to that point, and likely their reward is going to New York City for the pinstripe if it all happens. But, you know, that's part of it. And, like, this is a roster certainly with a lot of former high-end prospects, but it's also one with players, many of whom chose to stay this year because they had designs on winning a championship. I mean, you just remember how close they were in the CFP semis last year, and I mean, like their star running backs, Catron Allen, Nicholas Singleton, like those are guys who could have gone pro, decided to stay with Drew Aller and make another run at it. Obviously, Aller got hurt, but like I think it's a prideful group. Like this isn't like a mid-tier Big Ten team that's just sort of like, you know, falling short and playing things out. Like Penn State, they really felt like this was their year, and they were invested financially and emotionally and making a deep run. So I don't expect them to lay down at all. I do think the thing maybe that's turned with this team in the last couple of weeks is they've really leaned into being a running team. And maybe that coincides in part with, you know, Drew Aller's injury and needing to do that a little bit more. But you look at the blueprint that they just laid out against Michigan State, where those two star backs combined for 40 carries, and they both do it a little bit differently. And like, that's the roadmap. Like their receivers don't dazzle necessarily. It's the O-line, it's the big tight ends, it's the star punishing backs. And so I think and Nebraska is fully expecting that on the other side. So I think it's kind of has a throwback vibe, one where one team's season isn't going as expected, certainly, but I don't think that you'll see that big a difference just in terms of how they play and the talent that Nebraska is going to go up against on Saturday night.
And John Butler was obviously asked a lot about that yesterday. You know, what's your team's mentality against the run? What are you doing to try to slow it down and stop it? Evan, I don't, you know, think Nebraska has been necessarily, you know, scared to hit, scared of contact. It seems to me just like Nebraska's out of position, or Nebraska might not be physically talented enough consistently to get off the blocks that it needs to. What confidence do you have in Nebraska's ability to hold up against a Penn State rushing offense that it's really found itself, like you just said?
Yeah, I mean, there's some personnel limitations just in the sense that Nebraska doesn't have a lot of those big playmaking defensive linemen like they have had for years with Ty Robinson and Nash Huntmaker and Jamari Butler. They have some younger promising guys who I thought played some of their best football against UCLA. I mean, Keona Davis is coming along, and Riley Van Poppel had a good game. You can kind of go down the list. So that part's going to be a struggle, but I do think Nebraska has the ability to really sell out to stop the run, in part because they think that's what Penn State's going to do, but also because the secondary has been a strength all year, and that's not necessarily Penn State's strength right now at the receiver position or with the quarterback. So what that can free Nebraska to do is play some man coverage on the back end, say, you know, hey, Andrew Marshall and Sierra Wright and Deshaun Singleton, like, you guys play some man on the back end and allow Nebraska to devote another man to the box and really go after it. Like, I think that's just kind of where they are. You're going to see bigger personnel. Maybe this is a more of a Dave Hofkin game. You know, we've seen him in spurts at times. Kate Petschock, probably going to see more of him than we have in some other games this year. So I think it's helpful in the sense that you know how to prepare, like contrasting that with USC, for example, where they can pound it on the ground, but they can also run it with the quarterback, and they have star receivers. Like, that was a team that could beat you in so many ways. I think Penn State's a little bit less versatile in that way. And so you're really going to see Nebraska say, okay, we're not going to be fooled, but are we going to be out physical? I think that's the challenge that they have. And certainly the scheme's going to set them up to see if they can prove it one way or the other.
We're talking with Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald here on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Evan, a lot's been made of that Nebraska defense against the Penn State rushing offense. Still a plenty talented Penn State defense as well. Maybe down Abdul Carter, still a lot of good pieces there. What's the challenge for the Nebraska offense against this Penn State defense in light of what you heard from Dana Holgorsen yesterday as well?
Yeah, I mean, kind of the same thing, just really talented across the board. They're going to pressure. They're going to be aggressive. I think just because of where they are in their season, trying to win these last two and just what their record is, like, they're not going to be afraid to take some chances and bring some blitzes from some more unpredictable places. And so, you know, the big question, the big mystery is, like, what is how well is TJ Lateef going to be able to operate against this kind of a defense? You know, with UCLA, it was a defense that really was among the worst at pressuring quarterbacks at the FBS level. That's not the case with Penn State. And so how much will he run? How much does his mobile ability free up Emmett Johnson to do what he does? Even just the atmosphere, I think, is fascinating when you talk about what Lateef could do out there. I mean, this isn't 65 degrees in you know, kind of the warm California environment. Like, this is central Pennsylvania in mid-November. It's going to be colder. It's going to be louder and more hostile. The talent level on the other side is going to be different. So I think that part really sets up a fascinating battle. And, you know, I think Nebraska has the edge with its receivers, but what's the protection look like? How are they able to maybe get open and operate in space? Like, that's going to fall on Dana Holgorsen, I think, to scheme some things up in that way. So yeah, it's, I think the challenge for Nebraska's offense, these last couple of games are going to be pretty similar between Penn State and Iowa. Like, they're two very fundamental defenses, physical. They're not going to give up a lot of big plays. You're going to have to beat them downfield and avoid turnovers. And, you know, again, it's going to be really fascinating to see what Lateef brings in his second career start in a much different environment.
This November for Nebraska, off to a 1-1 start so far, doesn't really feel like a Big Ten November. You go from the West Coast games, you know, against USC and UCLA into a bye week, and then, oh wait, here comes Big Ten play again with Smash Mouth, Penn State, and Iowa. Much different November, you know, this year, Evan, compared to, you know, the, you know, Northwestern, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa triumvirate that Nebraska's drawn at times in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they stepped out and played a Pac-12 schedule for 2 weeks, and now they're back in it to finish. I think the bye week came at a good time. I mean, they just played 6 games in a row. You were on the West Coast. That's going to take it out of you. So it does feel like physically they were able to reset. You're going to get Desan McCullough back, Dawson Merritt, who's been a valuable rotational linebacker, back from injury as well. I mean, you hear from Luke Lindenmeyer, the tight end, saying, like, man, what a chance it was to refresh physically and mentally, just to get away for a day or two and reset. Now you've got a really condensed window here where you're playing Saturday night at Penn State. You get back and you got to get ready for Iowa on a Friday morning. So really short chance to recharge after that. So I think it came at a good time for them. And, you know, I think they understand things get going really fast here. You got 2 games, and then it's a bowl, and the portal is going to open soon. You got signing day in a couple of weeks. So this was sort of that last chance to take a breath and recharge a bit before things speed up.
The previous chance Nebraska had to catch its breath would have been on Saturday, September 27th, the previous bye week for Nebraska. After that loss to Michigan, Evan, Nebraska comes out of the bye week with its hair on fire, gets out to that couple possession lead over Michigan State for the Spartans, crawl back, take the lead, and Nebraska finishes with a flurry. How similar to that game script against Michigan State do you think Nebraska, you know, can afford Saturday to be, or does it have to look different than it did coming out of the first bye?
Well, I mean, it's a different caliber of opponent. I think that plays part of it. You know, Penn State's headspace is interesting to me. Like, had they lost to Michigan State last week and been out of the running for a bowl. Like, I wonder how motivated they'd be, but now they got that taste of victory. They got off the schneid under their interim staff. And so how motivated are they on a Saturday night? You know, I talked to a few folks in the Penn State area who were surprised that it was a night game, and it's coinciding with the start of their Thanksgiving break. And so their student section maybe won't be as full and robust as it would be for an October game or something like that. So I think those things factor into it a little bit. But I do think, you know, Nebraska was motivated in its bye week to finish this thing strong. Like, they still know it's a pretty big swing between finishing 9-3 in the regular season and 7-5. And so I think those first team reps for Lateef as the guy are incredibly valuable. I think, you know, again, after six straight weeks, having the chance to reset before you go back out east is important. So, yeah, I mean, I think they were playing motivated, energetic football 2 weeks ago. I expect that to be the case now. And, you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Michigan State game 2 years ago when they went out to East Lansing, and that was a team that had an interim coach and didn't have a ton to play for, and Nebraska laid an egg in that game. So I'll be curious to see kind of just what their headspace is, what their motivation is, as they're trying to, you know, as Matt Rhule has said, sow seeds for the future and what this program can be into the offseason.
7-3 Nebraska on the road this weekend. Devin Bland and other members of the Omaha World Herald will be out there covering it. DP will be out there for us. Make sure you're here with us for pregame and postgame coverage as always. And then, of course, read about it, omaha.com. Evan Bland, thanks as always for your time. Safe travels out to Pennsylvania, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Austin. See ya.
Evan joined us on our VIP line brought to you by Allo Fiber. That's where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local. All right, we'll go to break, bring Jay Foreman back in, wrap up hour two of Old School right after this.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Wrapping up hour two of Old School here on The Ticket. Austin Orman, Jay Foreman with you this segment. As always, brought to you by the good folks at Love Volleyball Nebraska. Their season starts in January. You can learn more and become a Love Volleyball member today at LOVB.com. Jade is White Boy Wednesday. Again, favorite time of the week. Second favorite time of the week. Second shout out of the week to Tekale Jacobson, right? We talked a little bit about Price Sanford on Monday, number 24 player on a per possession basis per Evan Miyakawa's numbers. But watching Nebraska, Oklahoma back as Nebraska prepares to go to Kansas City tomorrow and Friday, take on New Mexico, and then either Kansas State or Mississippi State, was really struck by just how in control of things Tekale Jacobson was. His and one bucket was huge. Him not blowing the behind the back assist from Rink Mast was pretty darn cool. He was in late when Nebraska needed him to. Struggled from the free throw line early, knocked him down late. 6 boards, 2 assists, 2 steals. A big shout out to him. And a quick shout out to my guy, John Shire, Chicago's very own. First time at Duke, he is 5-0. Blue Devils prevail over Kansas last night. Kansas cut it to 67-64. No Darren Peterson on the floor with a hamstring strain. That Duke team's gone sideways a couple times in the first three seasons. In those moments, they lost to Kansas in the first Champions Classic. Shire was the head coach for, lost a true road game to Arizona 2 years ago, or the home game to Arizona 2 years ago, and then lost to Kentucky in the Champions Classic last year. First time they moved to 5-0 wasn't necessarily pretty. Duke gets it done. Tip of my cap to White Boy John Shire.
Yeah, John Shire has been very impressive. He's tougher than what he looks like, too. Man, he's for real, like Chicago, though. Mm-hmm. He's not like
the Patrick Beverly stories about him.
Yeah, he's no punk. And he brings an element of toughness that, you know, the exterior doesn't, assume that, you know, he's a tough-minded dude. And he's got a great team, good young nucleus. He's got my man Slim Reaper down there. Got my man Evans representing Southeast Charlotte.
Who might have hit the biggest shot of the game. That 3-pointer from the corner.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, look, they're on the way to get that team of young athletes, or very, very young team, getting them, you know, kind of to mature and mix together. And, you know, we'll see this could be the year.
Have I told you my Duke conspiracy theory for why they're winning the title this year? I don't always talk myself into Duke winning the title, by the way. You know that. Okay, so the previous five teams that have beat Mount St. Mary's in the NCAA tournament, not that year, but the next year,
they won it.
They go on to win the title. This year's Final Four, Indy. Been very kind to the Duke Blue Devils before.
Are you going?
And John Shire has improved where Duke has finished every year.
Every year. Yeah, there's only one other step.
Only one way you can go.
This would be great.
Only
for
one
him.
Way you can
I mean,
go.
I like him.
I'm just saying. Just saying.
I like they took a shot on him. You know, wish him all the best.
Worked out better for Duke than it has for Carolina so far.
I know.
Worked out better for Duke than it did for Villanova so far.
Yeah.
So, shout out Cale Jacobson. Shout out John.
Yeah, Cale Jacobson's done a really good job. He was a prolific scorer, Class B, and then obviously just worked his way
up. Were they
up
B or they C1?
I don't know what.
I think it would have been C1.
It was C1. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
I mean, playing some major Class B teams.
Yeah,
as well,
and he was really good in the summer circuit. And, you know how it is. A kid from Nebraska, they don't ever think he can play. He goes and proves them all wrong. So big shout out to him, man. He's a good kid, too. Mm-hmm. Really good kid. Good. It's a good for local kids to see another local kid play, not only him, obviously Sam. I think you got Justin
Frager,
Bolus, who's a really phenomenal kid. They're all great kids too. Mm-hmm. And to see those guys get, you know, that Nebraska give them a shot, but then also when they do earn it, they get to play.
That they do. Whiteboard Wednesday comes your way next, breaking down some Penn State film. You won't want to miss it. Get to the stream, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or Allo Channel 961. Jay Foreman tells you what you need to know about Penn State to lead off Hour 3 of Old School.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.